Welcome to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. We're so encouraged that you are joining us here today. We have so many interesting things, God's news, behind the news, wisdom moments, and all those wonderful humor moments. Join us, VFN Radio's Extra Hour. You're listening to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so encouraged that you have joined us, and you will be encouraged too. VFN Radio, join us in a few. We'll be right back.
Previously on the VFN Radio program,
I was on the phone. Here I am trying to think about the dichotomy of this. You know, I'm not going to give any names, but I was talking to John on the phone.
Thank you.
This was years ago last week. No, this wasn't John. We were, you know, covering a city, you know, with what God had called us to do. And it was driven for a prophetic word. And the prophetic word is Malachi. You know, Malachi 4, 5, and 6. Before the great and dreadful day of the Lord comes, that he would send Elijah. And he would turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers, or else I'll smite the earth with a curse. Well, I mean, it is everything comes against you when you're moving prophetically, because you're coming against the antithesis of that word. Mm-hmm. God starts to launch a word and to reestablish or establish, you're coming against the establishment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You're coming against people that says, God is not concerned about it anymore. You know, that God doesn't care about the fatherless. You know, God doesn't care about the absence of my father in my life, and or the fact I'm there but I'm not there type thing,
right?
And you're coming out saying, no, it's important. And so here we are, you know, we're up at, you know, saturating the city, you know, during the early morning hours, and we wanted to be able just to kind of pop the next day when they came up, and they would you drive through the city. So we're putting 1,000 signs around the city, and then it has, you know, Malachi on it, and one side it said, Dad, please take me. Yeah. You know, and the other side had said, sir, please take me, you know, and because nobody would ask. We had to ask on behalf of the kid, because most people say, you know, I'm so busy, I can't get to. And it's just powerful. God was using that to speak, you know, and part of the, you know, the campaign to fill in the virtual stadium. You'll hear more about it through VFN Radio, that is going to the next level for the whole nation now. But with that, I'm sitting here talking on the phone to somebody who just got married. They just got married, I don't know, maybe 24 hours ago. It was actually approximately almost hitting 48 hours.
Right.
And so I have, you know, this is the cell phones. It wasn't the brick, but it was a little bit.
Pretty close to the brick.
Pretty close to the brick. And.
Cement block.
Yeah. And every yard sign does not go in the ground well. You know, we determined in that city we were doing that in that. We understood that soil is different everywhere you go in the city.
Oh, yes.
That's not dirt. That's concrete.
Yeah, right.
Looks like dirt. Dirt.
And so we're driving this word home, you know, crying out for the fatherless. And, of course, if we're going against the mindsets in the establishment, they just call you. They think you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the boys didn't think we were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They were pumped. They called cabs to come see us.
Yeah,
and the men were a lot of the men were angry with us because we brought the ideas like, did you ever think about spending time with your son?
Mm-hmm.
Or we exposed the reality is that even a man wasn't willing to take a fatherless boy in the wilderness. I mean, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? But then the ones that did, we found that out as well that there was men. The men that stood there boldly today, that I'm so proud of these men, especially what. You know, Satan does, you know, that it's the enemy is so against any form of attention that a man's going to pay any child anywhere, including his own. And anyway, so I'm on the phone. Now, you got to understand this. You know, we didn't just get here. I'm on the phone with this particular person who's been married now for 48 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I talked to this person before they got married. You know, and listen, if you want to make sure you got a good foundation for your marriage, first of all, don't marry a Christian.
Mm.
Marry a godly person.
That's right.
Don't. I got good news for you. This will help you out. Oh, I'm a Christian. Right. You just showed up at this gathering because you're wanting to snag me as your spouse. Mm-hmm. No, I want to see your life. Mm-hmm. Do you walk with God? Do you hear God? Do you obey God? Do you abide with God? And so these two Christians married. And I'm saying, listen, you know, go through some time of, you know, they call it counseling, but it's really not counseling. It's like, you know, what I'd like to do at that time, and I don't do it anymore, but I help other people do it. And is you want to find the stress points in a conversation with a couple and help them learn how to work through difficult circumstances and realize you can't teach people how to be married, but you can teach them how to abide with God and how to handle the tough things that come up. And if you can communicate, communion, a part of healing me is hearing me. So anyway, that, you know, that's some of the things that I taught and teach others to do now. And a lot of people just avoid it. And then you just sit back and enjoy their life watching afterwards. Like, oh, so he says, you know, I'm sitting there just pleading with him because, you know, I love them. And I didn't want him to go through the pain. There's going to be pain no matter what you think. If you do not, I mean, first of all, relationships, period, with anybody, you know, if you love them enough, that's only the loving relationships that cause you pain. It's not the ones you don't love. I mean, come on. Right. And so, and hopefully, you know, who does God love? We should love everybody, right?
That's right.
That's right.
So everybody's a pain. It can cause pain, I mean.
Right.
And so, you know, in that, you know, I'm telling them, I'm leaning over this table, I'll never forget, and I'm saying, I know right now you're thinking that you're going to get married, because he's saying this. He goes, we'll just do that after we get married. Let me explain something to you.
Wrong answer.
Everything's going to change when the I do is done.
Over.
Yep.
I'm not saying bad or good, but just the motives change.
Yeah.
I've already married you. So why, you know, why deal with myself? You know, why even be concerned about it?
Yeah,
right. I got you now, you know. And so he or she, you know, loses their motivation. But if they want to marry you, they're motivated on the other side of not married to you. And you've given away. It's like saying, hey, I want you to run a race, but here's a first place ribbon. And somebody says, I got the ribbon already. Why should I go through the pain and agony of running this race, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, of course, he looks at me like so many have done and says, dear Brother Greg, don't you understand? We're different than everybody else.
Mm.
I'm a worship leader. I am a leader in the church. Mm. I understand God. She even dances. When I sing, she dances around the place worshiping God. You know, and I'm like, dude, listen to me.
Yeah.
You know? And it was for her sake as well. I mean, both of them.
Right.
Because you got to go, this is my goal, I want you, when I say, do you take this man or woman to be your husband or wife, I just wanted you to know who it is. And don't just say, I do too. Yeah. I want you to know who you're saying I do too. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then if you said I do to what you knew who that I do was, I don't want to hear it. They are now your ministry. Enjoy your life. You know, and so here I end up, and so he didn't take the wisdom, but like Solomon, he learned the wisdom, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so 48 hours after being married, he's calling me up. I'm about 3 o'clock in the morning prophesying with yard signs and setting these things, thousands of signs up, trying to find it's hard to find a good man. I told all the women in the communities, you know, at the time, I said, because I was trying to find mentors, you know, to take these boys for a weekend.
48 hours.
Which is equivalent to 13 and a half years of the average father's life.
That's right.
I'm like programmed with that. And so,
I know it.
Because an average father spends what?
37 seconds a day.
35 seconds a day of undivided attention with their children. And that was then. I'll tell them what it is now. He texted me. And
yeah,
so,
that was before smartphone.
Yeah, it was before smartphone. And so I'm prophesying with these signs, and I have this phone on my shoulder, and I'm talking to him. And you got, I'm at one night, one early morning, putting up 1,000 signs. Can't we do this tomorrow? You know? And of course, it's early morning hours. And he's going, listen. And I said, yes. He said, she's following me around.
Humorous moments.
I said, you know, she's your wife. He says, you know, because, you know, if you've been single for a while, you just don't realize how selfish you are until you start living your life with people. When you start to be the church and quit just going to it, I mean, the narcissism and idolatry in the American church has become, our hearts become revealed, because you start finding out that's my stuff and my things and my time is like, no, it's God's.
Mm-hmm.
It's God's, you know, and it belongs to God. And anyway, so, you know, he said, you know, he's used to being, you know, into himself and isolated and that type of thing. And so he'd go to the next room and she would follow him into the room. Ladies, if you're listening right now, when a man walks away, you know, they're like rubber bands. You let them go. The further you let them go and get their thoughts together and their mind together, the further you will let them go, the quicker they'll come back. It's like a rubber band. You stretch it out. If you stretch it really far, it'll come back. But if every time they're trying to get a little stretch in the rubber band and you're letting the slack up, they're shutting down. You know, they're like, need some time to think. What I'm thinking now is not good. But the interesting thing is this. You know, this is what he's saying. And this is a leader. This is a leader in the church, traditional expression of church. He's asking questions like, "Well, am I really married?" I'm like,
"Oh my God!"
I'm like,
"Are you serious?"
I'm thinking, "Hold on a minute. Don't do anything rash. You've been married 48 hours. Anything that you were going to do has already been done in this 48 hours. You know, you're married.
That's right.
And so, hold on a minute." And it boiled down to this, that he was a fatherless boy that became a man. His father abandoned him. He didn't know how to be a man. I mean, society says, be a man. And they tell you, this is how you do it. It's like, that's not how you teach a man to be a man. And then you're going to ridicule me and shame me for not being what was never taught to me. You know, and so we're prophesying. So here I am. I mean, it just speaks volumes that I'm talking to the pain of a fatherless son, which is now in his late 30s or his mid 30s, whose father had abandoned him. And he's trying to figure out how to do this thing called what? Normal. And he doesn't feel normal. And at the same time, we're crying out for the next generations of sons. So I had an older son on one ear, and I had a prophetic sign in the other ear. Well, I had a religious church telling me, this is not really that important. Isn't that crazy?
Crazy.
But the Lord said that unless this happens, I'm going to smite the earth with a curse. And what are we looking at? The whole earth is quaking and shaking right now.
Right.
I mean, the Lord showed up in my office. He showed up in my, I was in my office preparing for a gathering that I was going to speak at. And it was almost 10 years to the day that God called me when I was in Israel to do what I was doing. It was 10 years to the day, because I remember talking to you, John, and looking back on on some documents or something at the time, and goes, it's been 10 years to the month at least. And he showed up. His presence was in my office, and I just like, bam, I just stood at attention, you know, like, oh my goodness, you know, just charged environment. And it was like, the Lord speaks to me and says, you know, the prophecy's finished. They didn't turn. Now I'm commissioning you for the next season. It was powerful. It was a powerful transition that took place.
Yeah.
And, which was sad too, but right after that is when Haiti began to shake and quake, which is like 50% of the population there is 19 years old or younger. I mean, it is a fatherless people. Yeah. And it began at Haiti. It began in Haiti. And they're running through the people who, so many people who denied God, and they're Christians in Haiti. But, you know, all the voodoo and all the corruption and their pact, that their historical pact that was made with the adversary years ago. They're running through the streets as it's shaking, and they're crying out to God. They said, we deserve this. Oh, dear God, have mercy. They're screaming, running down the streets.
Mm.
You know, it's like, but, you know, we can respond to God by just doing what's right. We don't have to wait for the earth to quake and shake. But look, ever since that day, ever since that encounter, after that 10 years, nonstop, driven to drive that word home, that prophetic word home. And it was so loud that the governor of the state began to change his speeches, and he ended it with Malachi.
Mm-hmm.
It was so loud that all the way from America, it made it to Indore, India, where Pradeep Kumar, with World Vision, began to desire us to come to different countries in different cities in India. And it was amazing. But the thing was, is that if we don't respond to God, it just becomes an event.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Somebody says, well, this is just an event. It's only an event because we didn't do what the campaign was for.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We didn't turn our hearts to God and turn our hearts to our children. It was just powerful. Everything was there.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was that, you know, that I was talking to, just because he's older didn't mean he's not that same boy that was sitting there crying in this tunnel of tears being affirmed by a man in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's so many lies now that's sown, and so much accusation that's sown, that anybody's scared to be nice to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And it's crazy, because if you don't, you know, passion denied perverts, if you don't give them the attention, they're going to demand it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's why today I think, man, those men were so awesome for 10 years to come out there with those boys, you know, with all society. And it's just the weirdest thing. You won't believe, you know, I'll share it in just a moment, you know, when we come back. But they have a Planned Parenthood has an event called Clergy for Choice. Clergy for Choice.
What?
And they have 40 days of prayer. 40 days of prayer for clergy of choice. And they're praying the opposite. I mean, it's crazy what's going on. Why? Because the enemy is against the children.
Mm.
The enemy wants to kill our children. He wants our children to feel unloved. You know, he wants us to not give our children what they need from a parent and from, you know, society. And he wants to divide everybody and make everybody like sand instead of like concrete. And I just want to encourage you today that if you are that person that, you know, you're 40, you're 50, you're 30, but inside you're still 8 because you got stuck and nobody taught you how to be 9. No man taught you how to be 9. And no one taught you how to be 16. And, you know, outside they're saying, hey, you know, take care of these bills and do this job, and they're blaming you for stuff that you're just surprised you're even there, you know?
Right. Mm.
And inside, you're terrified. But realize, you know, that was a strategy of the enemy to emasculate you and not give you what you need. You don't have to just divert and run into some other, a wrong relationship trying to get that. God can give that to you. When the church wakes up and becomes, you know, what we're supposed to become, the intimacy that you missed in your family, you come back, you get it. You can't force your people to be something they're not, but you know, who is my mother, who is my brother, Jesus said. You know, in the family of God, you know, you can have mothers and fathers in the Lord. You can have brothers and sisters in the Lord that you can, you know, it's going to be a little bit rough because, you know, you're just not going to believe it. You may show up and kind of just watch what happens, you know, but eventually you start realizing that there is such thing as genuine family. We've got to recapture this.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you'll, you know, start building your confidence, and then you'll actually, you know, you like hearing somebody loves you, and you don't believe it. Mm. But after a while, you'll start believing it a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And all of a sudden, one day, you just fully believe, hey, you know, I'm loved.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what the enemy wanted to do. The enemy wanted to take away the reality of God's love for you. And when you're loved, when you know who you are and you're rightly related, I mean, everything else is a no-brainer. I mean, it's just life's real easy at that point. But when you don't know that you're loved and you don't know who you are and you're still, you know, untaught, you know, life circumstances, you know, men learn through observation and practical application and just watching things happen. Mm-hmm. And if they've never had any of those paradigms, or they watched mm-hmm. television to learn how to do it, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just, it's amazing. And so I'm going to share some things in the extra hour too, as well, you know, that in Time Magazine, where President Bill Clinton saying five ideas that are changing the world. And one of them is that, you know, women come into power, but it's like, how much more power? It's like, you know, the men have disappeared. Where are the men?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, can't we both exist together? Can't we coexist in our roles together? Does one role have to overtake the other role?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. And Satan has a strategy. Satan has a strategy, and it's the fathers, you know, who speak the identity and the blessing and over their children, no matter what the devil tells you and what religion is thinking God has changed. Mm-hmm. And just be encouraged. That's what we're here in this conversation, to encourage you, to let you know, hey, I understood that the 30-something-year-old man that was on my shoulder as a phone, as I was holding the phone with my shoulder while I'm using my other hands to be able to put the sign, but I also understood the boys that they needed. And I understood, too, the people who were coming against me, because for them not to say what we were doing was important is to say that they're fatherless themselves.
Mm.
And they don't mm-hmm. even understand the significant role of that, that even God himself said, unless this actually happens, I'm going to smite the earth with a curse. Mm. If you haven't got a chance yet, go look what happened since 2008. Look what's happened yeah. in the world since that day. Definitely. When God told me it's going to happen. We're probably looking at about 10 years of quaking and shaking. Mm. But it's not meant to destroy us. It's meant to get us to look up and turn our hearts back to the Father. That's just memory lane as we're talking about some things that happened in the past. And it's just memory lane as we're talking about some things that happened in the past. And, you know, having, you know, an adult, you know, fatherless son on a phone, and yet reaching out for the next generation. And it was so cool. A lot of them, you know, Derek was one of the boys that came on to, man, now he's a man. He's a man. And you can, find him on the VFN Torch. You know, some of his segments are in mm-hmm. highlights of him of sharing. But he's a father now, and got kids and mm-hmm. all that
amazing
stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he's got the same smile and all.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
He was, matter of fact, he was preaching.
Mm-hmm.
And another young man that was out there, he's a youth minister now. But mm-hmm. then he was just a boy. But now he's a man, and he's a youth minister helping young people out and all. And there's all over the world. I remember mm-hmm. when, you know, Amber was at IHOP Kansas City, the International House of Prayer, and she sat in a classroom, and she looked at the guy next door in a seat or whatever, and he starts talking to her, and she realizes that he was one of the participants during the 10-year period of going to the
wow.
next step, you know, Outback Father and Son Camping mm-hmm. Trust that we call them. And
amazing.
And it's just touched the world. And you know what? You know, if you're thinking about, you know, is what you're doing for the Lord significant? Nothing you do for God is in vain. Not one thing that you do for him is in vain.
That's right.
But mm-hmm. realize the most effective things that you do, you know, for him will be the most things that cause you to feel like it's insignificant, because, you know, society itself will make you feel that way. It'll make you feel like, you know, it's not good. And the truth is, it is good.
Mm-hmm.
It is good. And that's why the enemy's lying. He's a liar, and he's a father of lies. Mm-hmm. So don't believe the lie. For example, when a kid says, hey, I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to hear any kind of wisdom. What they're really saying is like, my life's falling apart, and mm-hmm. I don't want to humble myself, but I need everything that
right.
you're saying. Can you say it in a way where it looks like I'm not actually having to listen to you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you got to read between the rebellion, right?
Mm.
You know, you think about this, that, you know, we want to talk about in just a minute about what's happening with the United Nations and Iran and all, but take a moment here. Dr. Dobson,
mm-hmm.
he spent his entire life, you know, dedicated to studying the family. When you think about it,
mm-hmm.
I mean, his ministry is called Focus on the Family. I mean, mm-hmm. he studied marriage, he studied children, he studied John. And just joking. And I mean, if you're going to get any wisdom on how to raise children, it would be from Dr. James Dobson.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, and you think, well, he's gonna, you know, I mean, raising kids. I mean, not just, you know, having tenants called kids in your home. I'm talking about raising kids.
Big difference.
It's a big difference. You know, when you raise corn, that means there is no corn. You plant the seed and you raise it. It comes out of the ground. It produces something.
Mm-hmm.
And it's productive. That's called raising corn, right?
Right.
And, you know, there's a big difference in raising children versus having tenants that you tolerate. And it's the hardest thing you'll ever do because you love, you know, parents love their kids so much, you know. And I've heard some lies about society. You know, they say, you know, society's problem is because it's all because of parents. And it's like, well, really? How could it be that way? I know parents that have tried everything that they could try. You know, a single mother or a single father or double parents. Everybody has an individual will. You know, and they blamed all society's problems on bad parenting.
Mm.
Which explained that person.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so, you know, you're seeking Dr. James Dobson. He's going to tell us how to raise teenagers, right?
Right.
And let's just go buy Dr. Dobson's book and get his DVD. He wrote a book called Bringing Up Boys. He talks about, he said he had this like 20-foot rope, you know, tied to a tree. This is probably something that you would have done.
Probably.
Yeah. And he tied it, and he's going to jump out of the tree, and he's going to swing it with this rope, this 20-foot rope. But the problem was the branch that he tied it to was only 10 foot away from the ground.
Oh my God.
There was a 10-foot differential there. And
obviously he wasn't melancholy. He didn't measure it first.
He didn't measure at all, you know. I think boys, though, young boys, no matter their personality, that frontal lobe is very important. It needs to develop.
Mm.
You know, you think it, you know, anyway, so, and so here's Dr. Dobson. You know, you're going to find out what Dr. Dobson has to say. I mean, this is going to be the secret because obviously I must be doing everything wrong. And so I'm going to go talk to the man who studied him. And this is what Dr. Dobson said. I mean, this, all those years, John, everybody, and this is what Dr. Dobson says, right? He goes, the teenage years, just get through them.
Thank you.
Just get through them. I'm like, can you expound on that?
Yeah,
they
really
last longer than that sentence, you know. Just get through them. You know, I think about this. You know, it doesn't say, the Bible does not tell us, you know, how old Satan was when he rebelled against God.
Hmm.
But I'm sure he was a teenager. Oh my goodness, it's just real tough. You know, you're trying to find yourself as a teenager and you're trying to get your own, but you're frustrated because you're still, you know, a suckling on your parents', you know, substance. But then you're saying, I am my own. It's hard to put your foot down when it lands in your parents'. Oh, it's a tough transition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if you have a father who loves you, you know, your father, and this is why the father's been emasculated and pulled out, but a father's going to say, well, it's just time for you to grow, boy. He was like,
"That's right.
You'll figure it out. Go plant yourself in some dirt." Mm-hmm. You know, because he knows that the kid's going to have to kick in.
That's right.
But there's so many things interfering with the way fathers raise their kids today that you know, what they call safety nets are destroying our children.
Huge.
You know, it would have been better for them to wallow in the mud a little bit, you know, and feed the pigs a little bit. You know, and the consequences of their decisions a little bit, then to run down there and give them a stimulus package so they could live in some place that kept them stuck in the mud, you know, for 10 years of their life. Right?
Yeah. And introduce them to two new friends, Sam and So Knight. Here you go.
Sam's
So Knight. Yeah. Sam and So Knight.
You're right. He's like, I'm leaving. Yes, baby, you're leaving. Well, your bags are already at the door, you know.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but you know, just helping somebody—that's what God does to us.
Sure,
and that's what God does to us. And it's like, but the devil has so many things into our nation's fabric, and I have a lot of theories about that, and I have a lot of word of knowledge about that. But we aren't talking about that much. But the it's all demonic when it comes time to anything interfering the way the father would raise his daughters and his sons, because God has innately put something inside that father or mother, you know, to be able to impart into them, you know, something that society that doesn't understand how God's designed us, that everything has to die first before it can become something. Everything has to, I mean, even the egg inside of a woman, there is no doorway. It has to fight its way out. There is no, I mean, there's pain. A woman has pain in the process of bringing forth the child. Everything's, it's, there's the brokenness of life and things that you just learn from that. But if you keep that away from somebody, they never learn. They just stay in this immature suckling state.
Yeah.
And the government just wants to be, replace God. You know, one of the names for God is the breasty one.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, as you begin to cry out for God, provision comes from God. And the government wants to replace God and them to become the breasty one, where,
right,
you know, if you need something, we'll provide for you. If you need medical, we'll provide for you. If you need provision, we'll provide for you. And all of a sudden, they don't cry out to God anymore.
Sure.
They cry out to government.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And it was okay to cry out to God.
Right.
You know, and that's how God's designed things. And, and you know, a child will never grow up despite them being 50 if they never learn to cry out to God. They never learn to turn to God and cry out. They're just stuck.
Right.
And they've never seen the provision. You talk a mother, a breastfeeding mother, that she could be across her house from a whole different room. And as soon as that baby begins to cry, as soon as that baby begins to cry, that God's designed the mother's body that instantly she will fill up with milk, ready to feed that baby.
Wow.
I mean, it just happens.
Wow.
And
that,
and so the baby gets frustrated sometimes and doesn't nurse. And so she gets frustrated, says, listen, I have provision for you. You're just going to have to line up.
Mm.
And that's how God is. Like, God's going, I'm the one that's giving you the air and the substance. You got to cry out to me, but you can't just get it any way you want it. This is how you receive substance from me.
Mm.
And the mother just gets more provision and more provision, where she starts hurting because so much milk is dropped because the baby's crying produces provision in the mother. And listen, if you're, that's how God is. One of his names, one of the defined names of God, if you look at the definition, it means the breasty one, the provision of God, the substance of God. But you got to line up to get it. You can't just say, throw it over here, my well of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to line up. If you're crying out to the right source, to God, you know, and going through the blood, which is Jesus' blood, and saying, listen, Lord, I need you. I mean, God's going to provide for you. But if you've provided for your kids every step of the way, now they're like 50, they've never got a chance to cry out to God and find out he's Jehovah Jireh. He's our provider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's such a strategy. You can see what the how the enemy's using the government to take over the role of fathers, to take the role of family, take the role of God in all these different areas, and saying, we'll take care of you.
And because of that different, or even become a warped perception, those that begin to take their hands off and allow their young people, the children they've been raising, to grow up and become the men and women, it's, you know, it's time to play the man, it's time to play the woman, it's time to do now, that could almost seem as if that was wrong to those people's eyes. How could you let them suffer? How could you let them, like, suffer? Who in America suffers when you think about it?
Right.
You know, who in America really suffers? You have children that were working so hard so many years ago as young children. You know, even in my own family, my grandmother, I remember stories her telling as a child working on the farms. And it's like, no one in America really can say that they truly suffer. We found out that we're in the richest percentile of the world.
Mm-hmm.
But it's through that suffering, it's through that going through, like you said, the pain, that we can actually learn.
Yeah.
But if we're looking back and looking for dependence upon a parent or anyone else but God, how are we going to make it?
And you look at you look at the people that's accomplished anything. If you listen to their life story, it consists of them going through pain. They were willing to go through the pain of the process to be able to arrive. I might have, you know, Tim Tebow's book sitting on my shelf, and to remember.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, Brett gave me a picture of Tim when he was praying for the Denver Broncos. Thank you, Brett. Mm-hmm. And sitting there to remind me and have his DVD that, I mean, he didn't just happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's dragging tires, trees, pushing cars, I mean, he's aggressively going. I mean, it's a very. He's got to be willing to tell himself no and tell himself yes at the right times and go through the process of all that. And we celebrate people who paid the price, but we complain when people are trying to encourage other people to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
How can you be trying to help me? You're having me drag a tire. Well, that's you said you wanted to be a Tim Tebow. You're going to have to drag a tire.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to have to deny yourself. You know, it's like, oh, my goodness, I can't believe I'm going to have to deny myself. And, and it's the process.
Yeah. You know, they wrote a book called The Millionaire Next Door several years ago. And the whole idea was to study millionaires. And they wanted to find out these marketers, these companies hired these marketers to find out how does the average millionaire think in America. So they just took a person who had a net worth of about $1 million. And they realized some really interesting things that the average millionaire, the millionaire next door was a person that actually worked very hard. Didn't make this Hollywood money or whatever, this gobs amount of money. They lived below their means. They lived in a house that was below what they could actually afford. They drove American cars that, you know, their credit cards weren't, you know, American Express black, you know what I mean? But they were actually, you know, just Visas or whatever. They had JCPenney cards and stuff like that. And so they started interviewing them. What they found out was one study was just about first generation people that came to the United States. They became so successful. And what they found out is that here's this working mom or dad who started a business here. They're working hard at their job. They rose the ranks. And now they've accumulated all this wealth. And yet they instead encouraged their children to do the very same thing that they did. They started buying them cars and sending them to colleges and propping them with all this, you know, stuff. Thinking that that's how they're going to, you know, do well. And what they did was, you know, bring a dependent, you know, next generation. And so next generation is totally dependent on the parents that came on over. And it's thinking, you know what? That's not how it needs to be. You know,
and now the government's saying, listen, as a matter of fact, you know, all the way up to the age of 25 now, you can be on your parents' insurance policy. And it's like, he's married and he's got three kids and he's a soldier in Afghanistan. Why does he need to be, you know, that type of thing? Is like,
serious.
You're not grown up by 25. Come on,
dude. It's half of 50.
Yeah. It's half of 50. And you look at our generations past, I mean, you know, that's half life.
Exactly.
You know, and it's like, it's a strategy. It's a strategy for nobody to ever grow up. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever to cry out to God. And everybody to be kind of stuck in God not being the provider, but someone else being the provider for what's
going on. The scriptures say that the laborer's appetite works for him. It drives him on. It's nothing like being hungry and needing to work. You know what I'm saying?
We'll be right back in a moment. You know, when there's nothing like, you know, finding out about, you know, that Jesus wants a personal relationship with you. You know, John, how people say, do you have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what people go, yes. And then the political correct answer, another religiously correct answer.
I go to church.
Yeah, I go to church. And but the thing is about it is that, you know, it's such a common semantic. It's a common way of vocabulary of religious. It's like the religious jargon of the day. But, you know, there is such a thing as a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. You know, that he's the lover of your soul and that, you know, he compares himself to the bridegroom and we're the bride and this intimacy and he's preparing. I mean, you know, he wants to hang out with us because he loves you. He wants to hang out with you. I mean, and he wants you to want to hang out with him.
Right.
And we're going to begin that conversation. Chapter 15, you know, he just says that he says, remain or abide in me. I think it's John 15:4. He says, abide in me or remain in me, and I will abide in you or remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must abide in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you abide in me or remain in me. And so, you know, sometimes we put the cart before the horse, and we're sitting here trying to do all this stuff for Jesus. And, you know, it's like, dude, it's a byproduct of a personal relationship with him.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? It's overflow. Go ahead.
You know, Brother Greg, you know, a lot of times too that you ask, you know, a believer or a Christian these days, you know, why do you read the Bible? And sometimes the pat answer is just, I guess this is what I'm supposed to do. You know, I just got to do this chore, right?
Two chapters a day.
Right.
Come heck or high water, two chapters a day.
And abiding is not something that we have to do. It's something that we get to do. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes people think that, you know, it's only the pastor or the minister that can hear God's voice. But, you know, John 10, you know, it's my sheep know my voice. And that's an inheritance for all believers. And so every believer should be encouraged, you know, abiding, spending time and hearing his voice. And
what do you think about it? I mean, it's just, you know, once you break the mindset and you realize that Jesus wants to talk to you. I mean, you got all these books that have been printed in the world, but the difference in the Bible is the fact that it's a living word, that it comes with the author, and that God explains it to you, and he speaks to you from the word, you know, and basically it's just that, you know, people kind of know that they need to do this, and the enemy's kind of complicated it, you know what I'm saying? And it just... You know, people want to do, they just need a simple plan to do that. And, you know, we put together a simple plan for, you know, that we personally do ourselves. You know, we walk out this plan and we're seeing children, you know, walk in this plan. And when these children speak about what God is, how they're encountering God and what he's saying, adults lean forward and listen to them on VFN TV. Did you know, remember how that happens? Like, they begin to talk and everybody like, I want to be the Bible man, you know, out of Texas. And everybody leans forward. Why? Because we know that God speaks to his people. Well, if that's you, if you're tired of religion and you're ready to walk with God, and God's obviously ready to walk with you, you know, he says that you can just put all the stuff aside that you've been trying to do and begin to abide with him. He says, apart from abiding in me, you can do nothing. So, you know, with that, you can actually go to iabide.org. Just go there today, iabide.org. You know, read over a little bit, and if you want to be able to request that plan, you could just request the plan. It'll be sent to you immediately, John. Immediately.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, there's a video there. There's some explanation, a whole, everything you need to be able just to get started. Real simple, simple plan that we're seeing children, 8-year-olds, that are walking with God and hearing from God, and just so excited, because when you start listening, I mean, what happens when somebody listens to you? You continue to talk, right?
That's right.
But if people stop listening, you stop talking, right?
Mm.
And quite often is, if you want to hear God talk to you, you got to start listening to him. And you'll find out he wants to hear what you're saying, but you have to want to hear what he's saying.
That's
and,
right.
And the definition of abide, everything you need is there, iabide.org. Request that simple plan today at iabide.org. R-G. I don't know if you heard about the podcast, but I'm excited about the podcast.
Talk to us.
The podcast for VFN TV, the daily radio program. Look, think about it. Mm-hmm. A podcast, this is what a podcast does. It happens without you doing anything.
Oh, that's good.
Once you subscribe to the our podcast, the entire day's programs, the teachings that are loosed, if they're available on VFN TV, released, the highlights, you know, the each individual highlights that you see on the VFN Torch. I mean, this automatically, if you subscribe to the podcast, and it's a podcast, it will just download somehow miraculously into your computer, into your iPhone, into your Android, and you don't even need to be hooked up in the Wi-Fi or anything like that.
It's good.
It just will automatically download it, so you can listen to what you want to listen to when you want to listen to it, because it's sitting inside your phone, your iPod, your Android, your computer. It's sitting in there like it's a song that you purchased and sits in your playlist. That's what a podcast is, which is pretty cool, because what that means is this, that everything that's ever happened in the broadcast, all these different topics and wisdom and everything that we're sharing with you to encourage you, but also to encourage others, that you can have them yourself. You don't have to buy them. You don't have to sign up to get something. They just download automatically through the podcast. Make sure you check it out. Go to vfntv.com. and subscribe to the podcast today. I think about that Promise Keepers, when Coach McCartney began, you know, God touched his heart and he began to share with his friend about, we just got to get men together and we got to get people together. And two men, one man, then two men, then 40 men, as they began to do this and build small groups of men around America, then eventually that filled stadiums. But the stadiums weren't filled because Coach McCartney had an idea. It was because God wanted to begin to get men in small groups and begin to show them himself. And so that happened. But the problem is when it came out of the stadiums, it just died out.
That's right.
And what got birthed in us at that particular point was, you know, that it was time. What is the next step after the stadiums? And if you go look at our history, our history started with next step. And it was it wasn't just an idea. It was like, what's the next step after the stadium? Because these men were alive. You know, and they went back to sleep, and they got back to seduced again. They went back to where they were when they were dead. They came out. They came alive in the stadiums and the small groups, and they went back in the dust. So what was the problem? And then we went through a process of repentance where we went into the wilderness to repent for the turning the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children to the fathers, and God moved mightily, and we finished that aspect of it. And then we went with the traditional model of what we've seen happen, and all we realized that is what's producing the death. We had to stop that. Then God called us out to begin to birth, you know, what we're doing today, understanding that God wants his church back. And I think about this. Reverend Billy Graham worked really hard. I mean, they would start probably a year, 9 months in advance to focus and fill one particular stadium. And he would go in there, the stadium, and everybody worked so hard to bring whoever to come into that stadium and fill those seats to be able to preach the gospel to them once. Think about it. When he preached once, that all of a sudden, people would find God. People would get saved. And they, and he transformed a lot of our nation and our presidents and all the things because he just preached the gospel one stadium at a time. And you think about this. You think about how very specifically that here we are today.
Right.
What we're finding out that God's called us to stadiums. We've seen the stadiums fill with people. We've seen them fill with people all across the nation. We've seen them. We've seen them crying out to God, and we've seen this taking place. But what's going to happen first, like the groundwork happened to Reverend Billy Graham when he began to work and do what was going on. He would begin to do the work, and then the stadium would be filled to preach the gospel once. But what we found out is this, in VFN Radio, based on what we're understanding at this present point, that when we share with over the 900 million people that are available right now and they're connected in the social media atmosphere, there's 1/6 of the world's population, that if we share with them VFN TV and the VFN radio program, that out of every dollar that we use to share it with them, one of them comes and sits on our virtual stadium. And they don't come, and they like us on Facebook, or they connect to us and download our app, but they like us. And so $1 produces someone sitting in that seat based on what we presently see. Where, think about it. So, and with Reverend Billy Graham, who did an awesome thing for the Lord, you know, he preached once to him. But with VFN TV and the data radio program, when you sit in our virtual stadium, when you sit and listen, and you have your VFN TV app, you have your VFN radio, you have Facebook, you have the VFN torch. I mean, it's just, you're just every day the gospel is coming to everybody who sits in our stadium. When you help fill that stadium, that virtual stadium, for $1 per person, it looks like, think about it. I mean, if you just write $10 a month, you can fill 10 more seats in this virtual stadium. The probability is just huge. I mean, think about it. Even $100 a month, 100 new seats get filled a month. You have this 1,200 seats that you filled yourself all by yourself, or maybe even a dollar. We can begin to transform instantly. Think about it. I'm looking right now at a particular article on a broadcast that we had over 73,000 people. Think about that. That's a stadium of 73,000 people that heard the prophetic word over what's taking place on one particular segment. Be a part of it. Let's turn the heart of this nation, and we can turn the heart of this nation by filling this virtual stadium. And if we'll fill this virtual stadium, this is what I believe. We'll fill stadiums all around this nation, but they first have to be filled, and the gospel has to be sown in their hearts now. How can you do that? Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. Click on fill the stadium now, and maybe it's $1 a month, maybe it's $2 a month, maybe it's $100 a month. By doing that, you fill the virtual stadium, and we can preach the gospel every single day to them, where Reverend Billy Graham only preached it once, and look at the return. We can turn the heart of this nation. Do it now. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. So that means that if you can light a fire, if you can.
Yep.
Well, I guess everybody but Pastor Steve, because I remember him trying to start a fire.
he's a
Marine. Now, Steve's a Marine now. You got to hear this. You got to hear this. Now, he's two tours of duty, trained on Paris Island. And so we're out there. We're taking the young boys camping, doing the next step out back.
Right,
Yeah. And And so he brings out all of his fire starting gear, you know, and it was like stones.
Like
and
two sticks
and like some like cotton looking stuff or something. And so he begins the work, you know, He's just rubbing stuff and, you know, and shaking stuff and focused. I mean, he's intense. Right. He's focused on this thing. And of course, we're camping, having a good time. We're watching the sun go down, come up. You know, we're just like, you know, he's like, we're going to start this fire, you know.
It's like, okay. Magnifying glass and everything to try to get the rays.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's just rubbing stuff. And we're just watching, you know. And finally, he takes a break. I think it's about maybe 8 hours into it or something. And this young 17-year-old kid walks up, dumps gas on the wood, throws a match, and walks off. And then, of course, you know, Steve's going like, it was wet! It was wet! That was so funny.
Of course it was.
That was so funny. We laughed. I laughed. I was with those boys. Steve and I took those boys camping at Bear Lake. And we laughed nonstop. I cooked nonstop. It's like, my goodness, I'm cooking. Oh, that's a big thing as it is. When I'm cooking, boys, they just eat nonstop. And I didn't think Steve would stop. No, seriously. And so one of the boys, Jacob, hilarious. But he's intense, consistently, nonstop, hilarious. And so here we are, you know, we're in the morning, and he's looking at me. He's so serious. He says, I want to fix breakfast this morning. And I'm like, please do. Yes.
Yeah, really.
Thank you. And he says, I'm gonna cook peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Oh, gosh.
And he's looking at me, you know, and these guys, the whole time you feel like these guys are pulling a prank. The whole weekend you feel like you're in the middle of a prank and you're the target. You know, they're fixing to do something, you know. And he's giving me this serious look. It was a very serious look, but it's like, how do you get serious over cooking peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, right? Mm-hmm. But they were serious. And so he was serious. And so he starts putting it, and he's just rubbing the peanut butter on the bread, and he's just serious, just thinking about it. And he's putting jelly on the other side. He puts it together. I'm thinking, well, I'm familiar with that, you know.
Yeah.
And then we had this big flat skillet looking thing. When I camp with a gas stove, microwave, and DirecTV.
Yeah.
And, in case the game comes on. And so he's sitting there. He's cooking. He lays his sandwiches down, and he's talking so seriously to me. I mean, the whole time he's talking seriously to me. And I'm thinking, oh, my goodness, he's serious. He's serious, you know. And he turns it over, and he says, you have to smush it like this. And I thought, oh, my goodness. You know, I was just so blessed. I had a wonderful, wonderful weekend. There was one situation. Oh, my goodness. I don't know. We have to talk about this at a later time. Maybe. I don't know. Well, So, you know, his mother, this particular cook's mother, you know, she calls out there. And, what happened was, you got to have a good time. There's nothing like taking teenage boys camping and you're trying to talk the police out of not taking them to jail. No, don't take them, park ranger. Don't take them. As soon as they got there, they jumped in the water to go swimming. And, of course, the park ranger comes out and says you can't swim. And you tell teenagers you can't swim in the lake. I mean, come on. I mean, that's what we went out here for, you know, just swimming and stuff. There's no signs or nothing. And so, but he was talking to us like we actually passed the sign on the way there.
Mm-hmm.
And so I calmed him down or whatever, you know, and said, you know, I'll do my best to keep these teenage boys not in the water. And he walked away with his cat. And so then in his hat, he had a real tall hat on. And so then they're in the canoes and they had a friend named John, and he is hilarious. Oh my goodness. He told stories about his dog. We sat around the fire. He's looking up to the stars. He's, you know, reminiscing, or, you know, as Rabbi says, how does he say it?
Reminiscing.
Reminiscing. We're reminiscing. And just hilarious, you know. Well, what happened was they were, when we first got there and they got on the boats, they had little canoes, and Chris and Jared, my son, his friend, Chris's son, they go out there, and there's a big, huge concrete drainage thing out there in the middle of it. You know, you get basically a platform in the middle of the lake. And so they go out there, and they start getting on it. But then, and Jacob was the one paddling the boat out there with them all in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as they set their foot on that thing, Jacob took off with the boat and left them out there in the water. And there's alligators, there's snakes, and possibly it's Bear Lake, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And, oh, my goodness, it was on the whole weekend. They sought ways to get Jacob back. And it was just hilarious. But one situation was Jared and Chris were separate than the other ones because they were trying to get the other ones back, I guess, and vice versa. And of course, Jacob was paranoid. And so his mother calls. His mother calls in the morning time. And this is like, you know, a state park, nice facilities, has different things, you know, bathrooms and all that. And so his mother calls, you know, and says, how's things going? I'm calling, checking. I'm sitting there cooking for him, you know, at the breakfast camp. And I said, well, everything's going great. We're having a wonderful time. And as soon as I hang up with her, I find out that when Jacob and John, you got to see John, you got to see John. He's just a funny dude. He's funny. And they come out of the bathroom, peeking out of the bathroom door, and Jared and Christopher had taken their clothes while they were in the shower. I'm like, oh, my goodness. No, you know. When we're always going to be thrown out of the park already because they were swimming with the crocodiles. And now these boys are like, oh, no, you didn't, you know. And they were ruthless. Of course, you know, Jacob left them out there. So this whole battle ensued, this whole thing. And so they were kind of scared of each other that a prank was going to happen. So they kind of broke up in groups. John and Jacob get lost. This is like the country. I mean, this is country area. This is like, you don't
want to.
Yeah, yeah, country. And they were so scared. They were walking. They got lost. They were in some dirt road in the middle of nowhere. And they're walking down the center of the road. They're just have all these. I guess they probably watch a lot of bad movies, which you shouldn't. So look what it does to you. Watch bad movies. And they're just paranoid. And so some ladies come by and say, we need a ride. And they looked in the back seat and had a whole bunch of Christmas gifts or something in the back seat. And there's all these things crossed their heads like, oh, my goodness, they're going to attack us. They're going to keep us. And I was like, oh, it was amazing. So then, you know, we can't find Jacob and John. So we start getting concerned. And so Jared and I start looking for him. And I'm thinking, this is a setup. This is a setup, you know. And Jared's got like a little penknife. I mean, it's about like a half an inch long. We're walking through the crocodile woods where there's bears and stuff.
This is at night, right?
This is dark. It's at night. And we're looking. I'm looking for Jacob's mom's son. You know, I'm trying to think, oh my goodness, where is he at? You know? And so I'm starting to think I saw a big flash back in the back of the woods somewhere. I'm thinking they are going to pop out at any moment. And finally I said, I'm thinking, boy, Jared set me up. I said, give me that pen knife. I made him stand behind me. Or the flashlight too, because they had a little small flashlight.
Right.
Stupid. And we found out that, of course, they were all just all over the place. We had such a wonderful time out there.
Were they playing this like manly game of hide and seek?
Oh yeah, remember they were gonna play hide and go seek, and then that's not manly enough. So you know, it's on video, so I'd like to score that video. They're you know, what are you gonna do? And they're all painted up with like mud on their faces, and they got their camouflage clothes on, and you know, I don't know, sort of like Danny Edens. And so he says, we're gonna go play hide and go seek. I said, that's not a man thing. What's a man thing? He says, we're gonna play what?
Seek and find.
Seek and find. We'll be right back after these messages. You've been listening to VFN Radio. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster, and we're so glad that you joined us. Don't forget you can catch us at VFNTV.com on your mobile applications. You can download it at VFNTV.com. Go to your Apple apps, your Android apps, and all those wonderful apps. We enjoyed our time together. And don't forget, 24/7 on VFN Radio. God bless.